This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to Asia Pacific Currents this morning, the 16th of March here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hanna.
I'm Diana Beaumont.
And I'm Pierre Morrow.
And we're taking you through to 9:30 this morning. Of course, Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Those details, Pierre.
Those details are, if you're on the website, it's www.aawl.org.au. The phone number is, if you're in Australia, 03-9663-7277. And, of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter as well, so you can contact us in many, many ways.
And in the second part of the program, Pierre, we've got a story from Cambodia.
That's right. It's a very interesting story. I actually did the interview 2 weeks ago, and it'll be you'll hear the date in the interview. But it's to do with the garment industry in Cambodia, and as in many other places, the industry is beset by subcontracting. And what happens is that factories just close all of a sudden, and workers are left without their entitlements. And so it's an interview with Tola Moon, who's the head of the labour program of the Community Legal Education Centre, about the Kingsland Garment Factory and how they eventually managed to win. That's all I'll say for now.
Yes, so that's coming up in the second part of the program, but of course, first up, news from around the region.
And we begin this morning in Jordan, where over 100 Nepali workers recently requested repatriation to escape abusive conditions at a garment factory. The factory is called Needlecraft Establishment, which carries an extensive record of exploitation. Needlecraft is a UAE-owned company that also runs factories in Egypt. For several years, the Institute for Global Labour and Human Rights has documented numerous cases of abuse at varying Jordanian garment factories. These factories export to brands that sell globally, including Hanes, Walmart, Target, Coles, Macy's, and Victoria's Secret. Five Nepali women who have worked at the Needlecraft factory for nearly 2 months lodged official complaints with Nepali authorities. They claim a range of violations, including underpayment, verbal abuse, overwork, and unsuitable living conditions. Additionally, they report that employers force them to work 18-hour days, exceeding Jordan's legal quota of 10 hours. Jordan's labour law allows workers 14 days of paid sick leave, but several individuals recounted that they were unable to take time off for illness. The women also complained of severe harassment by local youth. They said, "Children hurl stones at us, while older youth verbally and physically abuse girls. A few days ago, a few Arab boys attempted to abduct two Nepali girls and took away their mobile phones." Jordanian authorities are also culpable for failing not only to regulate employment conditions, but for their unwillingness to penalise factories with sustained records of abuse. In many cases, local authorities ignored the complaints of workers or failed to implement punishments against convicted employers. This pattern of conduct is contrary to Jordan's own labour law, which provides for mechanisms to penalise exploitative employers. The only way for workers, local and migrant alike, to achieve better wages, conditions and safety at work is for us to get organised and to fight for those rights. The bosses and the local authorities that prop up the bosses will not hand over these rights, wages and conditions. Workers change the world.
In Turkey, police raids have targeted members and leaders of public sector union KESK in the early morning of Tuesday, the 19th of February. This new attack against the Turkish trade union movement, carried out by the authorities in 28 cities across the country, resulted in the arrest of at least 100 unionists, including many members of the teachers' union, Edutim Sen. In total, 167 arrest warrants had been issued for alleged links with terrorist organisations. In the meantime, 58 of the arrested unionists have been detained, while the rest of them have been released. This isn't the first time that the Turkish authorities have used anti-terrorism laws to crack down on trade unionists. On the 10th of April, the Ankara 13th Heavy Criminal Court will start the trial against 72 other KESK members and leaders who were arrested on the 25th of June in 2012. In 2012, the European Commission expressed concerns about the Turkish criminal justice system and in particular regarding the limited access to the prosecution file, the failure to give detailed grounds for arrest and detention decisions, and the length of pretrial detention. While we've brought you this story before, it's important to note that Turkish unionists still need your support. There's an international campaign calling for solidarity, and for more information, go to laborstart.org.
And we move to India, where on a recent report, it's always been said that that workers cause strikes and that lose work days. But a recent report has actually showed that certainly in the state of Bengal in India, the reality is very, very different, wherein actually it's actually lockouts by management that cause the most days lost. It seems that in the 12 months till in the 2 years to February 2013, out of 5.5 million working days lost in the state of Bengal, less than 10,000 were lost due to strikes. The remaining was because of lockouts or suspension of work and industrial units by management. A senior member of the Communist Party of India, Marxist Anusum Rahman, said that the Labour Minister Bose's figures made it evident that more than 99% of man days are lost due to suspension of work instead of strikes, as claimed by the state government earlier in the week. Mr. Bose expressed his concern over the instances of suspensions of work declared by the management of various organisations despite their units registering profits. So obviously this is quite a clear case of the class war conducted by the employees against the workers.
And in Thailand, the Thai Labour Solidarity Committee on Wednesday led 650 representatives from four labour unions to rally outside the Australian, US and Netherlands embassies against alleged abuse of Thai workers by employers from those countries. At least 40,000 workers have been treated unfairly after the 300 baht, or Australian $9.70 minimum daily wage, was made countrywide in January 2013 in Thailand. Some companies outright refuse to pay the new rate. Some increase working hours to 9 without overtime, and some reduce benefits. Some close factories and lay off workers. The Thai Labour Solidarity Committee has been flooded with over 2,000 complaints from affected workers since the wage increase. The four unions that took part in the rally were from General Motors Thailand, the General Motors company in Thailand, NXP Manufacturing, Linfox Transport and Electrolux Thailand. The labour union for the General Motors units had requested annual benefits, but it was not only turned down, but also faced a counter request to change the work week to 6 days instead of 5. Workers would have to work more for the same pay and their breaks would also be shortened. The NXP Manufacturing Labour Union was hit with a change in employment of 5 work days per week. Their hours were increased to 12 hours per day, with the addition of 4 hours overtime on top of what they usually did. The labour union at Linfox Transport had gone on strike to demand benefits, weekly days off, 13 annual holidays and payment for working on holidays. But the company did not respond and instead laid off 50 workers involved in the strike. The Electrolux union had asked the company to increase the pay of existing employees beyond the 300 baht minimum, grant an opportunity for subcontracted workers with over 6 months working experience with the firm to take the exam for a permanent position. And they were also demanding a pay rise and annual bonuses. But this resulted in 129 Electrolux workers, including union members, losing their jobs. So these four unions have come together to rally outside the embassies of Thailand to demand that this new minimum wage be implemented and employers who are trying to shirk the minimum wage be made to adhere to it.
It's extraordinary the lengths that capitalists will go to. I mean, that's just, in fact, the minimum wage that was won was minuscule, and in an effort to not have to implement it, they've completely gone backwards on a range of hard-fought wins in the union movement.
That's right. And we talk about the minimum.
Yeah, $9.70 a day.
In South Korea, the site of the chemical storage tank exploded at around 9 p.m. on the 14th of March at Dailim Industrial Company plant in Yeosu, South Jeolla Province. Seven workers were killed and 13 injured in the accident. We're still collecting information about this story, but that's all we have at this stage. Of course, it's an absolute tragedy that an industrial accident has happened, resulting in the death of seven workers and 13 injured.
Yes, terrible story there. We go to Japan. That a significant court ruling in Japan has declared that some of Mazda Motor Corporation's most recent anti-labour practices are unlawful. The Yamaguchi District Court on Wednesday held that temporary staff employment practices were illegal, that 13 former temporary staff workers that the automaker displaced were indeed regular employees, and ordered Mazda to pay wages for those 13 workers as the same as regular workers. This decision, which is a landmark that recognises the right of temporary workers, is expected to have an effect on numerous other pending lawsuits. Currently, under the temporary staff worker law, companies are required to directly employ workers from temporary staffing agencies as soon as the tenure of their employees reaches three consecutive years. Mazda, under its temporary staff employment practice, chose to employ the temporary workers as support employees for 3 months and then shifted them back to temporary staff status after the 3 year consecutive years of service. And again, it's just such a tactic that's used so often by employers all over the world, all these casual temporary staff.
And in the Philippines, warrants of arrest have been issued for three of the KMU's National Council members and one of its regional leaders. Roy Velez, which is the KMU National Capital Regional Chairperson, Amelita Gamara, who is the Deputy Secretary General, and Ronald Ian Evidente, the Negros spokesperson, have all been charged with fabricated crimes in connection with the activities of the rebel group, the New People's Army. But the KMU's put out a statement saying the accusations against them are false. Criminalising trade union leaders is an act of harassment to hinder them from carrying out their trade union activities. It's part of the Philippine government's counterinsurgency program called Oplan Bayanihan, which hinders workers from practicing their right to freedom of association. Additionally, in the Philippines, the KMU Trade Union Centre is inviting trade unionists from around the world to take part in their 29th International Solidarity Affair, which is a trip to see their work in the Philippines. This solidarity tour will run between April 24th and May the 2nd this year and will consist of an exposure program to the mining and for export plantation communities in southern Mindanao in the south of the Philippines. Guests will also participate in May Day activities in Manila. If you'd like more information about the visit and the campaign to release the three KMU members, go to our website at Australia Asia Worker Links, aawl.org.au.
And that's really the end of our news stories. It's just on 14 past 9 o'clock here on Asia Pacific Currents, the weekly radio program of Australia Asia Worker Links. And as you've heard, it's... It really shows how the offensive against workers all around the world just keeps going. But the themes are always the same. We get underpaid, our hours just get longer, our contracts get cut, etc., etc. The laws are used against us. I could just go on, but it is time to have a short break here on 3CR Radio, and then we'll come back with the interview around the strike at the Kingsland Garment Factory in Cambodia.
Join 3CR Rumination for a special broadcast from the Where the Heart Is Festival. This festival is an annual big day out for the homeless and marginalised in our community. Hosted by the Royal District Nursing Services Homeless Persons Program. Listen up as we give a voice to the voiceless on Friday, March 22nd from 12 p.m. Tune in and hear from the characters and personalities that make up our unsung community and support some of the most vulnerable and disempowered people in our community. It all happens on Friday, March 22nd, between 12 and 2 p.m.
As mentioned earlier in the show, the garment sector in Cambodia is very big and it has increased over the last 10 years, but it's also beset by a problem that many other workers face around the world, and that's it, the issue of a chain of subcontracting firms. And so while big firms use subcontracting firms to do their work, and so when things go wrong, it's very hard for workers to know what who's actually owing them the money and how do they get it. But anyway, on this interview, we focus on the dispute at Kingsland Garment Factory, where the factory closed earlier, about in the middle of last year, and the workers set up picket lines around the factory to make sure that nothing was taken from the factory until they got their entitlements. So I did an interview about 2 weeks ago with Tola Moon, who is the head of the labour program of the Community Legal Education Centre in Phnom Penh, to give us a rundown about what happened at the Kingsland Garment Factory.
Can you give us a brief overview of the garment sector in Cambodia?
The garment sector is the main industry which contribute to the national economic growth, and it employ over 700,000 workers as a whole industry. And the employer, the business, mainly from China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Malaysia, South Korea, and there's around 5% are the local investor. And the product of garment sectors are exported mainly to the United States and Europe, and also some to UK and Canada and so on. So the garment sector, and it's actually starting from the free trade agreement with the United States and the Europe. Garment sector started with the multi-fiber agreement with the United States in 1990s, and then the multi-fiber agreement phased out in 2005. So then if you look at that change, we see the employment contract before 2005, the majority of employment contracts are fixed term contracts. At the moment, 80 to 90% of the employment contracts in the garment sector are under the short term contract or fixed term contract. And the minimum wage at the moment is $61 per month per workers, and the government, the trade union, and the manufacturers are in the process of discussion to adjust the current minimum wage.
Following on from that point, given that the minimum wage is quite low, how well organized are the workers in the garment sector in Cambodia?
The worker organized in the whole country, it's just only 1%, around 1% of the total workforce are organized. But in the garment sector, much more organized. People claim that between 70 to 80% of the total workforce in the garment sector are organized. But there are more than 2,000 trade unions in the garment sectors. But most of the trade unions are not protecting for the workers' benefit. They are influenced by politics and sometimes pro-employer trade unions.
It sounds like it's a complicated area. So Just looking at the dispute, that one of the disputes that you're actually involved in, the Kingsland Garment Factory. Now, this factory actually closed temporarily and then refused to pay any more payments to the workers.
The Kingsland worker, actually, it started operation in Cambodia in 1997, mainly sourcing for Walmart. And then lately, it's also subcontract with New Arctic, which is the main supplier for H&M. The factory, actually, they started to suspend work of the worker in September, October, and November. And then it started to announce closures in December. But the problem is the factory did not clearly announce that they are terminating or closing the factory. After seeing that the factory gate are closed and did not see the owner and so on, the worker just tried to seek for the clarification from the management. And then they reached to collect after they had been struggling for a couple of months. They approached us in late December, and then we decided to accept the case in January. So after accepting the case, agreeing to accept the case, we try to search for the brand who are buying from the company. So we managed to know that they are sourcing for Walmart. We are trying to contact Walmart and also H&M. And also worker also submit their complaint to the U.S. Embassy in Phnom Penh, also to the Sweden Embassy in Phnom Penh. At the beginning, both Walmart and H&M denied their responsibility. But after the struggle, 2 months struggling of worker, saying H&M and Walmart must take responsibility for the payment, the unpaid wage of the worker.
In terms of the factory and in terms of who owns the factory, the garment sector in Cambodia is very much a series of subcontracting. So while these factories are producing for large brands internationally, they're usually owned by much smaller employers in lots of subcontracting chains. And that makes it very difficult for workers then to get any wages back or actually find out how the contracts or how the conditions and pay in terms of the workers are often faced by the factory owners saying that we can't pay you or give you better conditions because our suppliers will go away.
Yeah. Exactly. The main problem is like the wage in Cambodia is 61 US dollar per month, which is very low compared to the inflation, the market price in Cambodia. And also because they are under the short-term contract, that's why the working condition is not good at all in the subcontractors of the factory. And the law enforcement in Cambodia is also weak. The law system in Cambodia is good, but the law enforcement is too weak. So that's why the worker have to work long hours, receive low wage. They cannot exercise their rights to organize, the freedom of association freely. It's guaranteed by the law, but the law enforcement is weak, so they cannot exercise the right to organize freely. The same as the right to collective bargaining, because they are under the short-term contract, and sometimes the management, they try to criminalize the labor dispute. They just file a criminal lawsuit against the union president, union leaders, to the court, and the court is not independent. It is corrupted and influenced by politics. So that's why the court system is also the challenge, the threats for the union leaders in the functionings of their role.
And in terms of the Kingsland dispute, the workers not only had to camp outside the factory, but also had to have flying protests around the urban areas.
Yeah, that the weakness of law enforcement. That's why they need to go to the U.S. Embassy, they have to go to Sweden Embassy and so on. And they also decided to block the road, also to put pressures on the government to seek for the solution. But, you know, without pressuring on the brand, the payment, the compensation would not be much. Just like the government has no system to kind of social protection system. They don't have to guarantee the legal payment for worker when the factory closed. So that's why we decided to take the, what is it, we try to promote the dialogue with the brand and hold the brand accountable.
From what I've heard and read, the workers at Kingsland had some very good support of solidarity from Walmart workers in parts of the United States.
Exactly. Advocacy strategy is we try to link solidarity with our friend in United States, the warehouse unions and so on. We also seek for the support from the warehouse worker in other countries like South Korea, Hong Kong and so on. They also went to the warehouse, to the Walmart office in South Korea, Walmart office in Hong Kong, telling Walmart that they need to pay wage to Cambodian worker.
Just today and Friday, the 1st of March, after 2 months of hard struggle, the workers have been able to win the back pay of around $200,000.
Yeah, it is history, I think, I can say, that Walmart sit down with the worker and agreed to pay to the workers. So it was good that the two brands, the two international brands, H&M and Walmart, but they also come along with their supplier. Like Walmart, they come with Saramax, and H&M, they come with New Arcade. New Arcade is the garment factory which producing for H&M. So it's good that they come along with the brand, and the brand come along with their supplier. So, and they agree in a meeting between, there was U.S. Embassy representatives come and observe the discussion also. So finally, yeah, it's a big victory day for Kingsland worker. But for me, I just say just only 80% hope for us, because the money has not been paid actually to the worker yet. So 100% satisfaction for me is just the day that the worker get paid.
Tola, that's probably a very wise word. Until everything is fixed, a promise is only as good as what's written in paper. But we certainly hope and wish that after the agreement, worker, after this meeting, the workers do get all their money, and let's hopefully of a fantastic success are not going to be dashed at the last hurdle.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Pierre.
And just as a follow-up of that story, no, I haven't actually heard whether or not the workers have received the $200,000 in their bank account in Cambodia, but we'll certainly keep you updated, and so we'll tell you when the last 20% of success is achieved. But that was an interview with Tola Moon, who's the head of the labour program of the Community Legal Education Centre in Phnom Penh in Cambodia. And that really brings us to the end of another program of Asia Pacific Currents. It's just on 28 past 9 o'clock, and we can hear the Kona Association outside the door.
Yes, and for once we're not going to eat into their time, so we're going to wrap up the show right now. Thanks for listening, and if you'd like any more information about any of the stories you heard this morning, go to the website of Australia Asia Worker Links, aawl.org.au. That's it from me, Diana Beaumont.
From me, Giselle Hannah.
And from me, Pierre Mora. And we'll be back next week with another roundup of stories from the labour movement in the Asia Pacific Currents. And stay tuned to 3CR Radio.